This podcast is presented by Pacific Office Automation, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. Learn more at pacificoffice.com.
Pulled in by Wilson for a touchdown. What a throw by Kyler Murray facing pressure. Connor to the five and into the end zone for the touchdown.
Welcome to Cardinals Underground, presented by Pacific Office Automation. Visit pacificoffice.com. Problem solved.
Middle of the end zone, picked off. Kaiser White with the interception.
The latest news and notes from the insiders who cover the team.
Touchdown, Kyler Murray. That defender is in multiple pieces.
Oh, that was nasty right there, right?
Slam to the ground by Buda Baker. Like a torpedo, he came flying into the backfield.
I ain't scared of nobody.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
All right, so I'm fresh off hosting an event that I was truly not qualified to host. That actually goes beyond this podcast. Cardinals Underground, Pacific Office Automation, Paul Calvisi, Darren Urban, Danny Sarek. Because I can tell just by the look in your eyes, you better make that plural, not singular, Calvisi, when it comes to not being qualified. It was the Marquee Math Competition presented by SRP, Cardinals team partner, and it was a bunch of these high school overachievers. Okay, you know my...
That was you in high school, right, Paul?
There's a reason...
At Leland High School?
Why? Well, as I used
you
off...
You and
the,
Pat Tillman?
As I used off the top, my little shtick, I said, I played 4 years for the Chargers, the Leland High School Chargers, so there you go. But as my buddy said, who all got scholarships and I didn't, if you can't play it, Calvisi commentate it. So, you know, here I am for the last 3 decades or so. Which brings me to a certain aspect of this competition, which was the trivia portion at the very end. For big prizes, okay? Big prizes.
Math trivia?
And there was one question. No, it was okay. Cardinals trivia.
Okay.
And there was one trivia question that stumped the entirety of the group. Ready for this? Who was the last Cardinals player drafted number 4 overall?
Was that... I don't even want to guess because I feel like I'm like a fool sitting next to Darren.
Unfortunately, I'm literally writing a story about this for next week, so I literally looked it up like an hour ago.
Come on.
No, what was Fitz, third?
Fitz was third.
I didn't say Arizona Cardinals.
I will recuse myself.
So that's a hint.
Unless Danny really can't get it, which she's not going to get.
Nobody got it. I didn't get it. Nobody got it. I mean, it was, you know.
I wouldn't have gotten it if I hadn't looked it up.
In fact, you do have two chances because it depends on if you go with his given name or then his professional name, if you will.
Well, or he changed
what
his
have
name.
You. Yes. Change his name. Bobby Moore, a.k.a. Ahmad Rashad.
Do you know Ahmad Rashad? Be honest.
Why are you guys going to call me out on a Cardinals team employee podcast about Cardinals trivia about 4 decades before my parents even met?
Exactly. Okay, wait, though. But do you know Ahmad Rashad?
No.
Because he's much more famous for something else.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and the year of the draft was 1972.
Ahmad Rashad was a good receiver. Bobby Moore was a good receiver for the Cardinals. He became a really good receiver with the Vikings. But he is much more well-known as an NBC sports commentator / Michael Jordan's best friend.
Oh.
Yeah. / sidekick. He would always do the Michael Jordan interviews.
Yes, because Michael loved him. And
the NBC, NBA
He's
games.
Also married to Felicia Rashad.
That's right.
The wife on The Cosby Show.
Yes, that's right. Good one.
Well, okay. As long as we're talking about interesting stuff that isn't necessarily directly Cardinals, okay. I want to bring Danny back into this. I did.
Please do.
If you recall correctly, we got some fan mail a few weeks ago that I mentioned. This is not from the same person at all.
I don't even know what you're referencing. I did get a message from
a listener.
Okay.
Was it my dad?
Totality was pretty cool. It was really cool to watch it get dark and then get light again. Neighborhood solar lights were coming on and then going off again. You are all welcome at our house any time.
You're going to regret that invitation.
We're going over to the Sarex, everybody.
Mr. Sarek.
Was it my dad?
Going to regret that.
Oh, man. Hi, Dad.
That's good. Well, there you go. And once again, I'm kicking myself. I should have just invited myself before the official invitation. I should have just shown up in someone's front yard and just taken in the path of totality.
The best part is he doesn't tell me like when he's listened. I just know he listens at some point. So it's not, he never made a reference I heard Paul
and Darren
say this.
I can't help it if Brian and I have a better relationship than you and he. So it is what it is.
Well,
okay then. Apparently.
Yeah. That's okay. My entire family has a better relationship with our new dog than they do with me. So that's
Hey, your
are
dog,
you still
your
going
dog
by Cheeto?
Your dog got a shout out in the mailbag.
Oh, seriously?
Okay. Did you guys stick with Cheeto or did you change it up again?
Stuck with Cheeto. He still answers better to Marty, which was given to him in the shelter. So it's problematic. Not nearly as problematic as he's gone from stealing socks to now stealing my work gloves. I was out back, threw down my work glove to grab a nail out of my pocket. What the? And the dog took off with my work glove.
Well, so, you were speculating before we were on the air. He stole your guitar pick.
Yeah, he's klepto. It's a klepto dog.
I was thinking work glove, like you wore gloves to work, and I just hadn't noticed. Or like, I know you're a big car guy. Yeah. Do you wear gloves when you drive one of your cars?
If I went around here like Michael Jackson with a glove on, I think he's probably noticed.
I'm thinking like the fingerless, like the leather gloves.
He is germ adverse. Maybe he just wants to not touch anything.
The fingerless gloves Darren wears to the gym for all his heavy lifting.
He gets into the bench press.
There you go. That's why
I don't have a bunch of calluses.
That's right. So there you go. I nailed Darren. I sorry for profiling you, but I was accurate. That
is
was good right there.
Is there something wrong with that?
Well, you know, no.
Apparently you see it as wrong. No. I just disagree. I'm going to talk to Mr. Sarek, and I'm going to get you uninvited. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Something tells me, Darren, though, and here's my segue in 3, 2, 1. If you had gloves to protect you from all the mock drafts, you would wear them.
No, Darren loves the mock drafts.
There are germaphobes and there are mock draftophobes, and Darren is
the
latter.
Here's the thing. I don't hate mock drafts because, as we've talked about before, I do the mock draft. They're just a very personal thing, except when I want to bother Danny with it.
What about when someone puts out a single mock draft and just one mock draft only?
Is that like doing one bracket for March Madness?
Exactly. I just respect that a lot more than, I'll just go ahead and put in 17 brackets for the office pool. No. So Peter Schrager spent a good portion of the last month, or so he says, talking to GMs and other NFL insiders and all that. And so he threw out his own Peter Schrager mock draft 1.0. And
to be honest, he said 1.0. So that implies there's going to be a 2.0.
Well, I don't know. I think they make you specify at this point, just so.
That's fair.
Anyway, Cardinals trade down from 4 to 6. As I 100% believe, Cardinals are trading out. They gone. They're out in the number 4 spot. And in this case, going down to number 6, they get a third rounder this year, number 70 overall, and a second rounder next year. They lose out on Marvin Harrison Jr., but they do get Rome Odunze. Danny, your thoughts on that?
Draft,
in this mock draft. What do you think about that?
Well, because the Giants take J.J. McCarthy, and the Chargers take Marvin Harrison Jr.
Correct. Although there's a lot more speculation now that Jim Harbaugh is going to forego the receiver at 5 because he wants to play Harbaugh smash-mouth football, and he's going Joe Alt.
Speculation. I can't imagine this time of year.
It's more, once again, a profiling maybe of Jim Harbaugh, because how did he win a national championship in Michigan? By getting ultra-physical. What did he do with the 49ers? Physical. Did the Chargers have a physical offensive line? Not so much. So he might go that direction.
It's funny because on one of the many mock drafts that I was doing and trading around, there was one I think I did where I ended up going, I traded like 3 times in the first round because every time I dropped, I'm like, okay, there's not really that guy that I would think the Cardinals would want, so I dropped. So you get all these draft picks going forward. And there was a story in The Athletic this week about essentially saying not every NFL team, like their paper has been written that the percentage, it was like, if I recall correctly, it was like it's like 53% of the time the guy you pick will have more playing time than the guy you pick, than the guy that's picked right after. Essentially saying like, what makes you say the guy that you're taking is going to be any better than the next guy or whatever? And basically saying that people get in the way and the actual best thing to do is to trade down.
Hmm.
And it comes down to the whole more bites of the apple. It's always better to trade down. But that NFL teams, when they hear this, they all nod their heads and say, oh, I understand what you're saying. But when the rubber meets the road, nobody can do it.
Or maybe they just don't get their asking price, whether it's unrealistic or not. For example,
well, but see, that's part of the point. Part of the point is like you're sitting there saying like this is, I understand about the asking price, but the point is like that doesn't matter. I mean, obviously you have to get a decent amount to move up, and you don't want to get screwed. But at the same time, this idea, like I don't know this, but I would be willing to bet that these people would say, if the Vikings give you two first round picks for one, you should do it.
So Danny, what would you say? If the Vikings offer is number 11 and number 23 for number four versus...
Is that all it is?
Or three first round picks, because the consensus seems to be right now, at least reportedly, allegedly, according to the rumor mill, Monty Asafort is holding out for three first-round picks if he's going to do a deal with Minnesota, Denver, or Vegas, which, 11, 12, 13.
Which, by the way, we don't know that.
Which, by the way, Peter Schrager confirmed in a follow-up tweet that's what he's hearing, that it's three first-round picks, the asking price right here, right now, week out.
To clarify, that would be 23 would be one, and then two more additionally, like in the next 2 years. You're not saying 11 and 23 counts as two of those three.
No, that counts as two
of
the three.
That to me is misleading, because you're not giving me three new picks.
True.
One of those is a swap.
True.
So that's
and that's what the
misleading
Niners...
to me to say we're getting three first-round picks, when the reality is you're really only giving me one more first-round pick.
No.
Or two.
It would be two.
Two.
And I don't have a problem saying three, because you're giving up one. You don't have four anymore if you're trading it. So what are you getting for that? Three first-round picks for that one first-round pick. Now, if you want to say when you do the math, what you get in the wash is two extra first-round picks, that's fine. But this idea that you're not – yeah, you are getting three first-round picks. You're not trading that first-round pick for Justin Jefferson. You're getting three first-round picks for it. So that's how I see
it. But you know what? When you bring that up with the 49ers, who gave up three first-round picks to go up from 12 to 3 with Miami to get Trey Lance, the Niners always squawk back and say, no. Two first-round picks and a pick swap,
whatever.
12 for three. So it's semantics. It's how you view it.
And I guess ultimately it's.
But anyway, that's the scenario. See, to me, 11 and 23 is not enough for number four overall, especially when a franchise quarterback is involved. Hence, my ideal scenario, as we sit right here right now, is Justin Jefferson plus 11 and 23. Other folks just have three first-round picks, period, two this year and one next year, and Monty will do the deal. In fact, you know what? That reminds me. Here, hang on here. I got to put the sign up. If we're talking about Monty and being open for business, here it is. You know, he said he's open for business, so there you go.
Just like the idea of you taking the time to go online and search an open sign and print it out and show up
Danny,
with your props.
More than that, I stopped by two hardware stores and I tried to have an open sign, a real one, and all they had were these cheap 99-cent for sale signs. I'm like, where's the open sign? So I had to settle for the printout failing me.
Again, we've talked about this a million times. I mean, yeah, Monty Osmond said he's open for business because he's always going to listen. Yeah. He should always listen.
We'll edit that out later, by the way. Go ahead.
Isn't it malfeasance if he's not listening?
I would agree.
Yes, it is. Yes.
It sounds like a cop-out to answer your question of, which I now feels like 3 or 4 minutes ago, of would I rather essentially have that deal for the Vikings?
I'm sorry, what are you talking about?
Would I rather have the trade with Minnesota or just trade down from 4 to 6 with New York? It's almost hard because we don't know what the board looks like. You could get a starter at 11. Now, I don't think that would be a wide receiver. I think that would be someone on defense, pass rusher, or cornerback maybe. And then you would address a wide receiver 23, maybe 27, which I like that idea. I do. If you want one of these top receivers, though, I think trading down from 4 to 6 is still a great option. And we've seen the draft picks that Monty Asafort has had in his first year and what this team has gotten out of them. And so to get a second and a third is still good. I can understand why that's not as great when you have three first-round picks and that's what's going to be in your future. I feel like it's almost a cop-out, and I don't even know that I can answer of which of the two would I rather have, because it's hard to know, I guess, what they would prefer in terms of a wide receiver or someone on defense. I think if you are looking at how deep this draft class is and how many needs the Cardinals have, as much as I would love to have one of those top three receivers, and I still would love to stay at 4, if I had to pick between those two, I think I'd have to pick the one with Minnesota, because you could get a starting defender and there are so many talented wide receivers that you can still get in the first round later on with 23 or 27. To have those and bundle some extra, you know, a future first-round pick as well, sounds just a little bit sweeter.
It's funny to me because there's a lot of moving parts here. Like, here's another one. Right now, the Cardinals have 6 draft picks for 2025. They don't have their 7th. They have their 1 through 6. Is Monty going to want to make some moves just to make sure that he has a couple extra picks next year as well? Now, again, that may or may
next
not
next year's draft stinks. That's what they say, at least.
Well, okay. But I think...
one draft at a time. It,
yeah, well, I guess I'm not really doing that
I can
either.
Barely process this draft, much less next year.
I guess ultimately, you know, again, I think it's all going to come down to what's there, what options might be there. And we've talked a million times about this. We don't know exactly what they think of the receivers exactly. And I don't even know what to think anymore, other than we have gotten to the point where we've talked about this so much that you can talk yourself into anything. I listen to you talk, Paul, and I'm really kind of surprised with how like if they take somebody at 4, and I'm not saying who, but if they take somebody at 4, are you even going to be prepared? Because you're sure acting like you're not going to be prepared.
Yeah, I love the idea of taking someone at 4. And honestly, trading down to 6 with New York is still almost, you know, best of both worlds if you're getting some extra capital and still getting a top receiver.
So they have the draft party Thursday night, Great Lawn. Doors open at 4. I'm going to show up about 5:30, 5:35, something like that. Because, you know, I mean, why even be there for number 4? Cardinals aren't picking at number 4. I'll just show up a little bit later, middle of the first round after they trade down.
When are you going to sign all your autographs if you're showing your bleed?
No, absolutely not.
He does that on the way out when he's going to his car. If he waits for then.
No,
when he's putting on his gloves to drive with the steering wheel.
Nobody wants any autographs from a guy who weighs as much as Greg Dortch. Please. Okay. Here's what I take away also from the Peter Schrager mock draft.
1.0.
It isn't the top of the draft. It's the very bottom of the first round. I learned a name I've never heard of before, and he happens to be a receiver. And Peter Schrager says he could be a first-round pick.
Who?
Jalen Polk out of Washington.
Oh, I've heard that.
Oh, yeah, I know that name.
Okay. So that was new to me, but I added him to my list.
I have mocked him to the Cardinals in, like, the third round before.
Okay, that's my point. If you're going to get a pass rusher or you're going to get a supreme potential cornerback one, you better get that guy in the first round, middle of the first round maybe. But there are so many receivers. This is so deep. Honestly, I think it's one of the reasons I'm not really buying Jim Harbaugh at number 5, not because he doesn't covet a tackle, but there are so many tackles, I think he'll get that guy later. Or maybe Jim Harbaugh might trade out at number 5 and pull what everyone's predicting for the Cardinals, get 2 draft picks later in the first round where he gets tackle and receiver. I could easily see that for the Chargers. But if you go through some of the names of the other premier receivers that could go in the first and second round, here we go, speed read. A.D. Mitchell, Brian Thomas, Ricky Pearsall, Keon Coleman, Troy Franklin, Xavier Leggett, Ladd McConkie, Xavier Worthy, 4-2-140, Malachi Corley, he's the guy out of Western Kentucky who killed it, Roman Wilson, Jalen Polk, there you go, first round according to Peter Schrager, Jermaine Burton, Bama's leading receiver, Jordan Winnington, who was behind the 2 big receivers at Texas, but he's a dude, he wasn't able to work out, they say he could be the next Puka Nacua, and then Javon Baker out of UCF, who transferred from like Alabama or Georgia, he's a big time talent, Bama transfer. So there's a dozen dudes not named Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, or Rome Odunze, who in any other draft would be first or second round.
And let me just say that all my stupid time on the stupid mock draft machine has made me familiar with almost all these names, which I never would have been before.
Well, and that's how you're justifying spending an inordinate amount of time on the draft simulator.
This is true.
It's, you just got to kind of take whichever side you want, because it's almost like a win-win, Paul, because saying all those names and in pretty much any other draft, they would be a first round pick is great, because that means you can address other areas first, and then if you take one of those players later on in day one or at some point in day two, okay, great, you've got a starting caliber wide receiver. Doesn't that also tell you how great those top three are projected to be if otherwise those players would have been first round or now being pushed back to day two? Isn't that appealing at all to you?
Yeah, it's a valid point, yes.
I do want to bring up, however, that this is what happens in draft season. I'm not saying it's not a deep draft. I'm not saying that some of these guys will be successful. Yeah. But we all know they're not all going to be successful. And for us to sit here and say, well, you could get the same, I mean, there might be a little bit of a drop off, but we can get somebody. We don't know. We don't know if these guys are going to be these a Whittington or a Polk are going to be starters in this league, or if they're going to be, I don't know, Chad Williams.
You sound like what C.J. Stroud said to start this week. C.J. Stroud, the Texans quarterback, met the media. They had an offseason workout, media availability. Someone asked him about his former teammate, Marvin Harrison Jr., and he scoffed C.J. Stroud and said, whoever is up there picking, be smart. Don't be dumb. Don't think too hard. Meaning, don't overthink it. Take Marvin Harrison Jr. if you have a chance. Now, are they former teammates? Absolutely. But I used to work with a guy who knew more about college basketball than anybody I've ever met. And he would finish in the bottom three of the office bracket every year. Paralysis through overanalysis. He overthought his bracket every year.
Yes.
So is that the point you're trying to make? Don't overthink it. C.J. Stroud, take Marvin Harrison Jr. and move on?
First of all, okay, so we're saying take Marvin Harrison, C.J. Stroud said, just like Jim Harbaugh saying, take J.J. McCarthy. He's the best quarterback since, I don't know, God. I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, I guess I kind of feel like I need somebody that isn't C.J. Stroud or Paris Johnson telling me how great Marvin Harrison is.
27 to begin with.
I mean, Buda Baker, you know, he's endorsing Roma Dunze.
Yeah.
You're not taking that either? Okay.
Like, I mean, again, I'm not saying it's not possible, but I need somebody who's got a little less bias here.
I see. All right. So here's a Daniel Jeremiah tweet. Quote, this draft will determine the next 5 to 7 years for the Arizona Cardinals. They have an opportunity to set themselves up for a really nice run. Is that over-dramatization right there? Is he trying to drive some ratings to his NFL draft telecast?
How would that do that?
I'm just trying to build up the intrigue.
Well, I
build
don't
up
know
the
if
drama.
That tweet is going to draw a bunch more eyeballs. I do think there's a certain truth to it. I mean, I think last year's draft and this year's draft are crucial to what this team is going to be, because you have your quarterback in place, and, you know, in the NFL, the clock is running. And I don't know what the Cardinals are going to do this year. You know, I think the hope obviously is that they push for a postseason berth, but we don't know. We don't know who they're going to end up with. I mean, this class could be awesome, but it's also going to make them a pretty young team. So, you know, I think you need, yes, a very good draft. But I also, it's weird when he says 5 to 7 years to me, because I'm like, who lasts 5 to 7 years? You'll get like three players on your team, even if you have a good draft, that are going to stay around, because you won't be able to pay. Let's say you hit on every pick, which nobody does. Nobody's going to stick around that long, because some of them you're going to have to let go because you're not going to be able to afford them all.
You brought up 2025 draft and 6 picks. I had no idea. I'm not looking that far ahead. No, nobody's focused on next year at this point.
Monty is.
Much less 5 to 7 years.
Monty's paying attention.
I mean, it's that old meme. Ain't nobody got time for that. 2025, we're in the moment. In fact, I'm going back to my marketing mantra from last year, Danny. A 2023 dip for a 2024 rip. And that's with 11 picks in this draft. And actually, I hope it's more. The old Wall Street term, pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered. I'm boss hog right now. Give me more picks. I mean, I want 3 first-rounders. I want 3 starters right out of round one.
Last year, the foundation was set. Now you have to build upon that foundation. You have 11 picks. That is a lot of capital. The Cardinals need to hit. Not on all of them. That's not realistic. When you've got, right now, at least 2 first-round picks, the Cardinals need to find some starters, and that's what they've been banking on. We saw that from the moves in free agency. Yes, they found some starters, really more so on the defense. You need to start finding the starters elsewhere and continue to grow from within. That's how Monty Ossenfort likes to build his roster, is those younger players and develop them. So you have to continue to draft well to have those players developed for your future. I'm not expecting the Cardinals to have a 12-win season per se, but we saw how competitive they were. The culture's been set, the standards, the expectations that need to be met with this coaching staff. Now you need to go out and you need to get some more wins in that column. So absolutely, this draft is important. This is going to set the foundation. I think any team in the transition phase that the Cardinals are in right now of a new general manager, a new head coach, you've got your quarterback set. This is where the pivotal years of building upon that foundation are. So you're not constantly feeling like you are swimming upstream. That's what we heard from Austin Fort and from Gannon at a joint press conference a couple weeks ago, is everything happened so fast this time last year, and then you're having to not only set your roster and get through the draft, but figure out who else was already here and whether or not you want to keep them. Now they're at the point of they're kind of feeling a little bit more ahead of the game, and they've got the foundation for what they want to do. Now you need to actually start doing that and seeing results.
See, to me, that's why I'd be very intrigued if the Vikings made Justin Jefferson available. Because to your point, there's so much youth already. There's 11 more picks. Will they end up with 11 rookies? We don't know. But with all the youth on this team, if you have a receiver who's plug and play, who's already an all-pro caliber receiver, yeah, you got to pay him. There's no doubt about that. But you seemingly do have the cap room, at least based on some of the websites. So if you were to eliminate the learning curve for one key position, and Justin Jefferson came in and you plugged him in right away, and he's still 24-25. As Darren reminded us last week, Larry Fitzgerald, his rookie season was solid. He was pretty good, but it took 2-3 years for him to really bust out and become a future Hall of Famer.
You have the reasons why it could make sense from an Arizona standpoint. Why would Minnesota want to trade Justin Jefferson?
Well, apparently
they wouldn't.
Now, it depends.
Paul, give me the longer answer.
Depends what you believe and what you read, but there's a lot of speculation that there's been a lot of negotiations back and forth that have gone nowhere. And there's speculation that the whole, there's been a $30 million plus per year offer that was turned down, that the Vikings leaked that to Adam Schefter because they're frustrated. And so when you combine that with the fact this is a loaded draft at receiver, combined with the fact they found Justin Jefferson at 22 overall, combined with the fact that they need a franchise quarterback badly, that maybe, just maybe, they'd be willing to part with him as part of a package to Monty Austin Ford. That's the thinking.
Well, I want to move off this subject, but I will say this, that I don't think that's a small part of any trade, is if you were taking a player and he has to get a new contract. I mean,
you're right.
And if those are the numbers you are talking about, why would you want to get involved in something like that? That's my opinion, for the same reasons you just said. If you can find a receiver in this draft, why would you want to mess around with it?
Right. So here's my segue out of Minnesota, because that's where the Cardinals found themselves last year for the joint practice. Danny, true or false, it was very warm and humid in Minnesota a year ago.
One of those days, yeah.
Beyond true,
yes.
Paul.
When Danny passed out, it was just a horrible situation.
So when the head coach says there's a joint practice coming this year, it's going to be, quote, out east, and it's going to be hot.
So just
there's
not,
no way it can be any hotter than Minnesota was last year, right?
So what did we learn? Not the Chargers. That's pretty much what that tells us.
Yeah, basically
that would be West,
not the AFC West.
No, I'm saying no.
Could be KC.
Because he said it was East.
Yes, the Cardinals.
He just said it was hot.
That's right.
You said it was East.
The Cardinals would have to travel west to California, so I guess that eliminates the Chargers.
Because again, I remember doing the Chargers when they were in San Diego, and there was a practice in training camp that was super hot.
Yes.
So.
Here's what I'm thinking. You guys tell me if I'm right or wrong. Now, you know my own personal hope. It's not the triangle of humidity, Jacksonville, Miami, or Houston. That's just my own personal.
I hope not.
However, I do put Houston near the top of the power pole of possibilities because JG and D'Amico Ryans have a good relationship, and Monty and Nick Caserio have a really good relationship going back to New England. There's a reason those two swung a deal last year in round one. So I have Houston near the top.
Houston in the summertime, though, Paul.
New England and Tennessee also have connections with Monty Austin Ford, obviously. Those are possibilities. No connection that I know of to Buffalo, the Jets, the AFC North, or Kansas City, anything substantial. However, Gannon is good friends with Shane Steichen and the Colts, Indianapolis. And as someone who covered the Indy 500, it can be hot and humid as soon as late May.
I've only ever been to Indy in February for the combine.
I think it's funny that Paul's talking about how it could be hot in August anywhere, especially, I mean, are you not aware of climate change? And
Is this where you bust into your meteorologist?
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's going to be hot anywhere.
It's pretty much going to be. I don't think that was really a tell, although it is funny. I'm pretty sure JG's like, I don't want everybody guessing where we're going.
Oh, I guess it's not the Cowboys because they go to Oxnard. That would also be California.
Well, and he said AFC.
Oh, that's
he
true.
He did
also.
Say AFC. Yeah.
But see, when he says hot, like that stands out to him. It makes me think Jacksonville, Miami, Houston. That's the problem. To your point, Darren, most of America is hot in August. I get it. But when he uses that as a descriptive term about the site.
Well, here's what I don't understand.
Does it matter who the Cardinals play in the regular season? I mean, does that come into play at all? With Miami? Is that someone?
Probably not going to have a preseason game against a team
right?
you play in
so
the
regular
season.
Right, so that would knock out Miami.
And this would be the idea, I'm assuming, is that wherever they practice, they're going to play a preseason game there, obviously.
Yeah. And they played preseason games in Tennessee before.
There's been some weird, like, I remember going to Green Bay for a preseason game, and thinking to myself, why are we going all the way to Green Bay for preseason?
They have a tendency to send the Cardinals to the central time zone a lot. No matter where it is.
It feels like we used to, like, as long as we weren't playing the AFC West that year, we would just stick with AFC West. And that was a lot more, those were easier trips.
So at some point, we'll get the answer to the whole joint practice thing.
You know where else it's hot in August?
Uh-oh.
Here.
That's right. There's a reason the Cardinals are going on the road.
And not hosting a joint practice?
That's right, because it's nowhere hotter in North America than Phoenix, Arizona in August. So, okay. Now, look, you guys were out there Did you actually witness any of these the off-season training out there, or was it just the press conferences? Danny, take us through what exactly was made available for the media this week.
No, the strength and conditioning workouts are not available to the media because that's phase one of the voluntary portion of this off-season program right now. So the players.
So Darren wasn't out there with his weightlifting gloves, you know, fingerless? No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
See, now he's a hater.
That was a cheap shot. Go ahead.
To my knowledge, no, Darren was not out there with his weightlifting gloves. So the players who are here voluntarily are working out with the strength and conditioning coaches. They can be in the weight room, out on the field. They can meet with coaches, but they cannot meet with the coaches out on the field. So it would just be in meeting rooms. And while we don't have the set, you know, the exact attendance list, we do know from our own social media at AZ Cardinals and arrival photos and whatnot that Kyler Murray has been in attendance voluntarily, which is huge. I mean, really, he's been at the facility all offseason, not just now. It's nice to see, okay, this is his first full offseason with this staff. And I mean, over the years, he's taken a lot of flack because he hasn't been here for all the voluntary portions of working out on his own off campus. So to see your franchise quarterback lead by example and be here when he doesn't have to be is nice. That's what you want to see from a franchise quarterback.
I feel like the parking lot was pretty full that day.
Mm.
It's been full every day so far.
So in some of this video, you see Yelda Froholt. Now there's Trey McBride and then some of the tight ends, but Yelda Froholt can I'm gonna throw out a content idea here. You guys ready for this? Just sparked a light bulb right there. On the Big Red Rage, he talks about his weight room that he has at home in his garage. Right? That's his hobby, to lift weights. And he likes to, in his words, display feats of strength to the other dads on his block now that he is a father. He likes to go out there and do feats of strength out near the curb in the front yard.
That's fair.
That would be.
I would probably too if I were him.
That's an Emmy award winning story idea.
That's what he uses his gloves for.
That's right. So Darren, we're going to send you over to do that feature story, and you can spot Yelda with your weightlifting gloves. You can stand over him on the bench, and you can spot him. That would be good.
As long as you drive me over with your driving gloves.
I'm not involved in this.
Not yet.
Boy. Okay.
Not yet.
All right. So we also saw Trey McBride in there.
Of course, with a big smile on his face.
Yes, I did not know. We had a chance to interview him about his trip to Poland. I said, "How do you say Trey McPlay in Polish?" He didn't have an answer to that. But what he did say was that because it was a military trip and they visited different military bases, him and his new teammate DJ Dallas, that the Army guys challenged the two of them to an Army combine fitness test that involved a bunch of feats of strength. And then a 2 mile run. And Trey said, "Yeah, I competed pretty well until the 2 mile run. I'm used to more like 20 yard bursts instead of 2 miles." He said, "So that was a bit problematic for me to compete with the military
impressive.
Guys.
I wasn't aware that he was able to do something like that. I mean, again, I think it was great that they went over there. It's been interesting. The news about the Poland trip came out recently. And then, of course, last weekend there was the Pat Tillman run, Pat's run.
How many for you now? Pat Tillman runs.
Well, that was the 20th.
Wow.
I've missed
Darren
two.
Got a shout out from Gannon at the press conference that Darren was there running fast.
Wow. Yeah,
he didn't see that. But I missed the first one. I wasn't involved in the first one. And then I missed one other one. I was out of town at a concert with my brother. But I've been parts of all the other ones, including the two that were virtual because of the pandemic.
Mm.
This was the 20th, and it was cool to be out there and to, you know, be a part of that. And it's just when you see the Cardinals take part in Pat's run, when you see DJ Dallas and Trey McBride go on this USO tour, which Larry Fitzgerald did once upon a time back in the day. I think that's cool part of being part of the community.
What I think is a cool nugget about the USO tours also is McBride, who talked with the media Monday, said that DJ was always going to be the person he went with, even before he signed with the Cardinals.
Really?
Yes. And that Trey said he was happy that DJ came over to the right side from Seattle.
Darn
so they were always going to go together, but then they got to go out there and bond as teammates. And I think that's a pretty cool little nugget.
That's right. DJ Dallas and LJ Collar. They came over to the right side, you know, from the Seahawks.
In fact,
I look forward to next offseason when I firmly believe we'll be using the words last place Seahawks once again. I really do. I enjoyed it a couple years ago when
I know
those
you
were,
do, Paul.
That terminology. So, okay. Anything else from the Jonathan Gannon press conference other than a Darren shout out for the Pat Tillman run? What else?
Take them where I can get them.
What else was newsworthy, noteworthy, Jonathan Gannon? You know, anybody try and hit him up with some of the changes he's making to his scheme, supposedly, allegedly, offense and or defense?
No, we're not going to get a whole bunch of specifics.
X's and O's, and O's.
We didn't even get specifics on the changes from year one to year two in this offseason program. I do like the fact that Gannon said he talked to the players because he said if you have a question and you want to know something, you ask the player. So he definitely took insight from the players from last year into what they kind of wanted to see a little more this year. Something that's not a surprise that we learned was that Gannon has been having his hand in the dirt when it comes to testing out these kickoff rule changes.
That's right.
We hadn't had a chance to talk to him because Darren was at the owners' meetings, but Gannon spoke before the change was announced, you know, this 1 year for the kickoff changes. And so when I asked Gannon his thoughts on them, he started saying how he was out on the field with special teams coordinator Jeff Rogers and some coaches and trying to go through the motions, which makes sense to know what you can do and what makes sense to ask of your players as you're scheming things up. It's such a funny thought, and it makes so much sense, I feel like, when you interact with Gannon of, oh, that really doesn't surprise me that he's out there and he's trying to break tackles, which he said, although he doesn't want to tackle anymore, he still can. He just doesn't want to.
Right.
And he was out there giving making Terry and Arnold do press coverage on him during the combine.
That's
remember?
Right. That's right. Yeah. And then Nick Rawls supposedly stood in against a couple offensive linemen and then paid the price. Apparently the next morning woke up and wasn't quite, so he's pretty sore. But it was interesting. He played the cut for Wolf, Ron Wolfley, 10 years in the NFL, four-time special team Pro Bowler, and a guy who would cover kickoffs for a living like no other. And so when Gannon was telling the story of he's at R5, and he said he made most of the tackles on kick cover, although Jeff Rogers disputed that based on the film. Wolf was getting out of his seat like, oh, and then you look in his eyes and he's reliving his days covering kickoffs and the whole deal. So I'm guessing Wolf and JG will sort of reminisce about that. But that's what Kerry Rhodes, former Cardinal, former teammate of Jonathan Gannon, said about the Cardinals head coach from their Louisville days. You won't find many people as competitive as Jonathan Gannon. So,
oh, no.
So when he tells that sort of story, I'm not surprised.
You can tell.
Yes, you can tell.
It kind of oozes out of him.
Yes, yes. Speaking of Kaiser White, there's my segue. He met the media.
Whiplash. Yep, yep. Sorry.
Kaiser White, come on now. I want to hear, what did Kaiser have to say about what Mack Wilson had to say about the two of them being dogs there in the middle?
It was funny because I think Mack talks a little bit more than Kaiser. Kaiser is a man of few words. But I feel like they're kind of like the same type of player. And it feels like they would mesh really well together. Mack Wilson talking a few weeks ago about how he looked forward to playing with Kaiser. And it did look like Kaiser had a smile on his face being able to play with Mack Wilson. But I also get the feeling like Kaiser White is going to be excited about whoever's playing next to him as long as he gets to be playing, which obviously he didn't get to do enough last year when he got hurt, you know, tore his bicep. What was that, week 12?
Whenever Houston. And he's on track. He said he's not 100%, but he's here. He's going through the conditioning program, so that's a good sign. He said he didn't even go on vacation this offseason. He just spent time rehabbing. What was wild to me to think about was, I think it was your question, Darren, of asking Kaiser mentally, because we haven't had a chance to talk to him, what that process was like, because he had played every snap leading up to that injury. And Kaiser, and after that, yeah, was going to be my point, was Kaiser was tackling with one arm and said he thought it was a cramp. He tore his bicep and he thought it was a cramp. I mean, what? Tough as nails.
I'm just guessing, though. I'm just guessing that, you know, since it wasn't a leg injury, a knee injury, anything, you know, with a joint or whatever, I mean, you know, he should be good to go by mandatory minicamp at the latest, I would think, right? I mean, a bicep, so...
I didn't even stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, okay, Paul, so I'm not qualified to give any kind of medical information.
Edit that out, too. Here's the better point. Here's the better point, is that I think the difference between Kaiser White and Mac Wilson this year versus Kaiser White and fill-in-the-blank last year is Mac Wilson is going to be a three-down linebacker. You don't have to take him off the field at any point. Some of the other running mates Kaiser White had last year in certain passing situations were a liability. Not Mac Wilson. Dude can run. He can cover. He's one of the best coverage linebackers in the NFL,
so
according to analytics last year.
So you see them using two inside linebackers.
Yeah,
all the
I could really see those guys. I mean, you talked about Kaiser White. Was he a Paris Johnson until he got hurt? He had played every snap.
683 snaps, and that's total.
Wow.
And the last like four or five, if you go watch the tape,
mm-hmm,
he shouldn't have been out there.
Wow. Wow.
Because he literally was trying to do things with one arm.
Interesting. Well, and
he, you know, again, he's trying to play through it. I'm not dissing him, but it was like, man, that's crazy.
I still remember him on the sideline pleading his case, wanting to go back in. Like, no, no.
I remember the game after the game. Yeah. I mean, he got hurt before halftime, I'm pretty sure. And after the game, he was one of the last people. He was still in full uniform when we got in there to interview.
Wow.
Most guys had already mostly changed, and he was still in full uniform. You never see that from a guy who gets hurt and is out for the game.
Yeah. I mean, that's just abject disappointment and denial at that point, right, that you're done for the season. Because it's one or the other. Either you get the surgery right away, and you do have to get surgery within a week or two. There's a short amount of time for a bicep reattachment. Or, I remember this from Lorenzo Alexander and Adrian Wilson, or you live with a deformed bicep the rest of your life. So, you know, the whole beach bod thing the rest of your life is a negative because one arm looks all mangled like it got bit by a shark.
I'm pretty sure Kaiser got the surgery.
This is why Paul never would play with something like that because he wouldn't be able to handle not having the beach bod.
The two of you today.
Yeah, not to be confused with the dad bod. All right. What else? Since you guys were there and I have to catch up on the press conferences, Danny, was there anything else I missed? Trey McBride met the media. Kaiser White, the head coach. Anything else stand out? Was there any more trash talking about draft picks from the alma mater? I see there's another tight end coming out of Colorado State, so I don't know if Trey McBride's taking credit for that.
No, but it was nice to hear from McBride, just hearing about the growth he had. And you can tell that it seems like McBride just needed a chance. That playing second tight end behind Zach Ertz and the previous year not getting a lot of reps. I mean, McBride said himself he's going back and watching his film from his rookie year and he looks like a deer in headlights. The fact that he wasn't even a starter his entire sophomore season last year because he was playing behind Ertz, and to then finish the year with the numbers that he did and to see that connection with his quarterback skyrocket the way it did when Kyler made his return, the sky is the limit for McBride. And especially with Kyler Murray as his quarterback. Now, McBride said there are still a lot of plays he left out there that he thinks about. Really, that Atlanta game, Kyler's first game back, where a pass was intercepted because Trey continued the run and Kyler wanted him to sit. So they're still working on that. But seeing the connection they had and to now have a full offseason together and they're both healthy, I mean, it's almost like what's the limit if there is one?
That is a great video melt we just saw of his highlight reel from last season. You just realize he's not going down on first contact. He's making
good hands.
Great hands, catching the ball away from his body, soft hands, catches in traffic, making guys miss at different times, just the competitive juice, the fire. What was the saying we ended at the end of last year based on how much ribbing he got from his teammates? It was come for the first down catches, stay for the awkward celebrations. That's what the guys would say about him, because they're like, his celebrations were just, according to his teammates in the room, were awkward. Jeff Swaim and those guys said, Elijah Higgins, so it's all right. Trey owned it. He had a good
time.
There's
a learning curve for everything, Paul.
That's right. So, but I do agree. As soon as Zach Ertz, he was no longer in the shadow of Zach Ertz. He was a different player.
And you can tell that confidence. And he talked about that, of walking into the offseason program this year, of having a better sense of who he is as a player and what he's capable of and what he still wants to do. He said he still wants to become a more complete tight end, really focusing on his run blocking abilities, and that he grew up with a coach that told him, if you can make an impact in the blocking game, you'll be rewarded in the passing game. And that's something that he wants to continue to really work on and hone this offseason.
Now, I did have to apologize on behalf of Ron Wolfley to Trey McBride. We're seen here because in an interview in April, Wolf asked him what his weight was. And I said, and then he went into the whole run blocking thing and all that. So Trey can pretty much repeat what Wolf tells him verbatim, word for word, because he's heard it so often. So we'll see if Trey embodies more of that. But as McBride responded to Wolf, he said, we're going to make you the run game blocking quality control coach, so just to appease him.
Yeah, but see, Wolf might want to do that.
that's right. Well, and that'd be a win-win, okay? That'd be a win-win. So, then Wolf, boom, get him down on the field with the coaches. So
I'd like to continue to see McBride obviously be a complete tight end, but continue to just be one of those targeted receivers. Even if the Cardinals do draft a receiver and find a blocking tight end, I don't know if that's in the draft or if that's a late signing around training camp, but when you look at the rest of that tight ends room, I don't think anything is solidified. Jeff Swaim was your blocking tight end. He got hurt late last year, is still a free agent. Elijah Higgins looked fine in the 11 games. He played 163 receiving yards and a touchdown. Is he a true number two, either as a pass catcher or a blocker?
Not yet. Not
right?
yet. No.
And then behind Higgins is Travis Vokolek and Blake Whitehart. Each active for just two games, no stats. I think tight end is a sneaky offensive need. Again, I'm not saying that's climbing above other positions, other offensive positions in the draft. That's something you can address later. I just think that even if you draft a receiver, Trey McBride is going to have such a pivotal role in this offense. And while it is important for him to block, and he understands that, and I agree, I want him to continue to get open. And considering how often this offense likes to be in multiple tight end sets, you're going to need some extra bodies back there.
You have three third-round picks. If there's a tight end who falls in round three, at least based on the Cardinals' board, absolutely. I think you're right. I think that's a sleeper position they could go after in round three that I haven't really considered at all, tight end in this draft.
I'm not saying a tight end to come in and replace McBride as your starting tight end, but you need some depth in that room how offensive coordinator Drew Pensing likes to run his offense.
They use two tight ends so often. What you want to do is make sure that you're in a position where – there's an injury or whatever, you're ready. Now, I do think the Cardinals have some optimism for what they have. And I also think that I don't know if the draft is where they find somebody if they want somebody. I think, to me, it feels more likely that they would find an undrafted tight end or out of some kind of veteran. But probably, I don't know if they're spending. I mean, there's so many places where you want to spend picks on of other positions that they need. Like, would you be surprised if they drafted two cornerbacks?
No.
Would you be surprised if they drafted two defensive linemen?
Nope.
Would you be surprised if they drafted two interior offensive linemen?
Or nope. Wide receivers.
Or two wide receivers. I mean, like, you have 11 picks, but it's only 11 picks. Like, you don't get 20 players out of it. So.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, and heck, who knows if there's really, like, a standout. They take some of those day two and day three picks and try and move up if there's someone who in their mind has fallen on that board. And that's the luxury of having 11 picks, because are you really going to bring 11 rookies in one draft class plus any undrafted guys? Yeah, theoretically you could, but especially this team where it's at right now in the rebuild mode. But don't tell them I use that word, by the way. But if you're using some of those picks to go after guys you think who contribute right away, have a special value on your board, Yeah, that's the great thing about having all those picks. And once again, I want to get more picks. So, you know, we're going to leave the light on for them here, okay, the rest of the NFL. In case any of the GMs are trying to get some intel on the Cardinals, we'll just leave the light on for them right there.
That's nice of you, Paul.
How about that? All right. Anything else needs to be said? Any airing of the grievances here? Anything that I missed, Danny?
I want to make sure Danny has my bed all made up in the Sorek household.
I don't have any apologies to lend you this week, Paul. So.
That's right. Hey, Darren owed me an apology. You know what? Darren owed me an apology.
For what?
I can't remember exactly what it was for. I do remember declaring at the end of the last podcast, he owed me an apology. So I'll have to go back and check the film. Because the Eye in the Sky Never Lies. I'll go check the film, and then you know what? We'll carry that over to next week on Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation.